All right, this is 449. Mic check. His mic check. Checking the mic before the thing. Maybe this is just the intro right now. Who knows if this is actually the intro?
A week off. He's...
It's checking with Adam.
Yeah, this is the intro. We'll call that the intro. So yeah, it's Punk News Podcast episode 449. Unsubscribe now.
Soul sad.
Hi. This is the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White, recording for you here in my basement, Niagara Falls, Ontario, returning after a week off that I took off for reasons that I don't quite remember right now, but I'm sure they were good. So I came here to pick up the pieces. I see that Hallie's gone. She probably like wisely fleed whatever happened last week. So left in the rubble, Mr. John Gentile out in Philadelphia. Hi, John.
Hello, Adam. Hallie was a delight, as always. It's always a pleasure to have her on the podcast. And Adam, it's always a pleasure to have you on the podcast. I'm glad you're back with us, and we enjoy your company.
I enjoy my company, too, more than most people. Also,
plus, we love the rubble, Adam. We love the rubble. We excel in the rubble. That's where we really want to be.
That's not like an Oscar Wilde quote that you just said, Adam. I enjoy my company more than most people. That's pretty funny, actually.
Yeah,
you should be on PBS or the Canadian equivalent.
I should be an old dead white guy that people quote. That's what I should be. That's Mr. Tom Trauma. Speaking
you're
of old
well
dead
on,
white
you're
people,
well on your way, Adam. You're well on your way. Halfway there.
Oh God. Yeah. So, anyways, this is a show in which we talk about things that kind of happened, or maybe happened within the week of the punknews.org community. Stories, news, reviews, and mail. If you want to send us mail, it's podcast@punknews.org. That is how you do that. And I believe we have some. But before we get to that, John, you have some sort of HR announcement.
Oh, I do. This is just a minor thing. So at Punk News, until last week, I was the reviews editor, the features editor, the news editor, And I was the podcast editor for a while before Adam White stepped up and then became the podcast editor. I am no longer the reviews editor. And I had a very weird – one of the things that bugs me about some former Punk News editors is as soon as they left Punk News, they started talking smack on Punk News, which I could never understand. I could never say, why would you want to put 10 years of your life into something or 5 years and then just turn around and talk smack on it? That kind of devalues your own stock, if you will. I never understood that. But to a degree, I did understand that and that I stepped away. Well, I was planning on stepping away from being the reviews editor in August, but editor Jeff stepped up. He said, I want to do reviews editing now. I'm like, that's fine with me. I've been doing it about 6 years. And the irony being is I was never actually technically the reviews editor, despite all the hate I get in the Punk News comment section. The whole reason I was doing it was because one day there was no one else to do it because Brian Yancey had left. So I said, I'll just do it temporarily until someone steps up and does it. And then 6 years later, I'm still doing it on a daily basis. Well, now it's Jeff. It's no longer me. That's great. I will say for about 36 hours, I had a sense of melancholy. I was like, oh man, like I saw Jeff going in there, making moves, doing stuff, you know, changing things. I'm like, well, that's annoying. That's not exactly how I would have done it. It's 98% the same, but 2% different. I'm very annoyed by that. And then came the first morning where I didn't actually have to edit reviews. And I got to say, all of that melancholy, I'm not even kidding. It just vanished, Adam. It just vanished. Like, I was like, this is great. Some people get into writing to be an editor, which I never really – like, why would you want to be an editor, which I never understood. I got into writing to be a writer and to write reviews and do interviews, mainly to do interviews is my main thing. And now that I'm not doing, now that I'm not editing reviews anymore, I have more time to write reviews, which is so much more fun. It's great. The melancholy vanished in like 36 hours, like one day. I was like, wow, it's gone. Wow.
I always joke that somehow I got into writing to write HTML, and that's my, that has somehow become my career. Like my early involvement in punk news, I can draw a direct line between that and being a, you know, overworked computer programmer person. What I found, and I'm not trying to say this to discourage, well, I'm not, okay, John, I'm not trying to say this because I don't want to discourage Tom, because Tom does good work, so don't let him know about this part. But
Tom does do good work, people. Very good work indeed.
The one thing what that the one thing that I found was
my ears are burning.
For my, I was about to say for my mental health, but I have a beef with that as a term. Just for my overall peace of mind, stepping away from punk news, although I never did in any official capacity, I just sort of like stopped worrying about it, was good for me. And there is a, like, there's something about this thing as an entity in that, like, it's not our jobs. And we see the value in it, especially for like little bands. So we want to help, and we can help. And it is a useful thing in the world, even today with the super weird saturated internet that we've ended up in. But we're never sure like where the line is about who's actually responsible for it. And you get the feeling, you get to feel after a while of just being like the guy that like, if you're not sitting there churning, you know, the world is going to grind to a halt and, you know, not that necessarily like something else wouldn't fill the void, but that like we had a good thing going and it was helping people. And now we've let it die. Right. So that you get that in you where you're like, oh shit, if I don't keep at the pace, then I'm going to somehow like fail this entity. And what I found is that like, no, you step back and the world kind of keeps turning, and then you can figure out what you're doing still. And, you know, especially if what you're doing still involves punk news, that's great. I mean, sometimes it doesn't, but in your case it does. It just that it's a weird kind of burnout. And I liken it to like, there's people, this is gonna be a boring computer thing, but there's people that work in computers that like contribute to like open source software projects. So like things that like everyone in the world uses that are just, you know, owned by no one, owned by the community, maintained by volunteers, you know, volunteers write the code, volunteers do the bug fixing and all this stuff. And those people burn out so bad because of just the kind of stuff that John, you were talking about, where like, everyone wants stuff. Everyone's shitting on you when you're the one doing it, but they want you to do it differently. And it's like, it's a real problem on this here internet. I don't have a solution for it, but it is real.
Well, one of the big problems is the people that do the least have the most amount of time to complain, you know, and that's really one of the problems of the internet, you know, so.
Well, you know, I get what you're saying, Adam. I think the thing is, me being a little older, I make every decision very slowly, and I take young people tend to be more rash. Like, okay, I'm done with this. I'm leaving. If I need a little break, I take a little break before I make any radical decisions. You know, I tend to write enough stuff and be productive enough stuff that if I take a couple weeks off, nobody hardly even notices, to be honest. So I don't know. I just don't do anything rash, you know?
Well, like, but here's a question for you. Like, do you ever have the fear that, like, what would happen if you were just to walk away? Because I'll think about that sometimes with regards to the stuff I do, where I'm just like, if I just stopped all of the internet stuff that I did, right? If I stopped all involvement with punk news, if I just stopped writing and sending the newsletter that I write, if I, you know, deleted my Facebook and my Twitter account and just like woke up tomorrow morning as a guy who has, I don't know, I have an email account, right? Like just that. Do I maintain some semblance of of normalcy, or have I just tossed out a huge part of my identity, or have I, you know, is there sunk cost that I've now burned? Like, have I wasted years of my life? Like, you know, or when I wake up in the morning as a free man, unencumbered by the world of obligations that don't pay me. I don't know.
If you know, if you wake up feeling like a free man, then I guess it was supposed to be over. Me personally, I would like to think that when my years of being a little more involved are done, like I said, if I need a break, I just take a break. That's how I do it. But when my days are done, I'd like to think, and this is true of you guys too, obviously, because both of you have been around a whole lot longer than I have. But after 5 years and 400 reviews or whatever it's been for me, I like to think that I could still maybe occasionally send something in, maybe have some sort of a like emeritus status, like a retired professor, like still have a little bit of like special privileges, even though I don't, you know, participate as much as I, because we do have a couple of people that don't write for us regularly that occasionally still contribute, you know. And like I said, I think the totally walking away thing, that's such a young person's, such a rash young person's thing, you know. It's like I'm not liking this right now, so I have to totally disassociate myself with it. I know it's, you know, better to burn out than fade away, but I think
I don't even know if that's true, honestly. You know what I mean? Like a lot of artists, like their very best work is behind them, but they still make at least pretty interesting work, and they make work that only they can make. You know what I mean? Like Frank Zappa maybe is a good example. Like a lot of his stuff,
he's not doing a lot of new stuff, but yeah.
A lot of his stuff in the 80s and 90s isn't his best stuff, but it's interesting and different. So I don't even know if I, like, meanwhile, like, what's
the other? Did he live into the 90s? Did he live into the 90s, John?
He died in, like, 92, I believe.
Okay.
I mean, the other example is the Germs, and the Germs are amazing. But, you know, once you get through that first album and the two singles, that's it, you know? So I don't know if I even agree with that phrase, to tell you the truth. I mean, look at Neil Young. Neil Young has a lot of records, and some of them are not so good, but some of them are great later on. You know, and so
yeah, truth, John, truth.
It is weird being a person on the internet, but yeah, I don't know what to say about it. But then, see, my problem is that, like, and I know how these things play on me personally, and largely I'm okay with it. Is that I am super addicted to the like dopamine hit.
Okay.
To the dopamine hit that you get from all of a sudden realizing that, like, you know, the bands that you have written about are receptive to what you've done and care. Right. Mm-hmm. And it can be a dumb thing. Like, the one thing I got in the habit of doing, probably to the annoyance of everyone I know, is that every week when I write one of those newsletters, I'll go through the link on the Twitter and Facebook, and I will tag all of the bands that I have mentioned in it. And inevitably, I'll get, you know, a whole bunch of, you know, stupid internet slot machine noises will happen, right? I'll get lots of likes and faves and retweets and stuff like that. But during that little period where that happens, I'm happy as a clam. I'm like, oh, these things are happening. All this acknowledgement is coming in. Yay, right? And then that's gone. And then next week I kind of like re-up and it happens again. But I was at a show a couple weeks ago where I saw a band called, who the fuck did I see? Why am I blanking? I saw a band called New Vogue play in Hamilton. New Vogue is, it's Max and Chance from Pryors and from Sonic Avenues. So these Montreal garage punk guys. They have this band called New Chance that is sort of based around like Max's bedroom recordings of making like weird Devo music. It's super fun and I love it. And I was out there talking to them after the show, and I wasn't trying to do like a, oh hi, I'm Adam from Punk News, you know, please pay attention to me kind of thing. It was just one of these like tiny little bar shows that was ill attended, and I was hovering around, and I did an Instagram post or something, and then one of them saw it and they walked over and they were like, oh hey, you're Adam. And then it became this big conversation about Punk News, where on the one hand these guys were like super appreciative of like any time any of their bands have ever been mentioned, and not only that, but they have like history with it, right? Like they're talking about like times when bands that they were in 10 years ago were mentioned and shit like that, right? And I'm sitting there listening to all this, And at the one point, I feel a little bit guilty because I'm like, I don't do all that much for punk news on a day-to-day basis, so I feel weird taking credit for a lot of it. But on the other hand, I'm like, wow, we're helping. Okay, this is great. So yeah, I mean, if I keep running into situations like that, that wherever I get to the point where I'm like, am I burned out on this? I'm like, oh, it makes these people that have a shitty existence driving around in a van and playing in empty bars, you know, it makes them happy that I'm doing things for them on the internet. And that makes me happy. Maybe that's enough. All I need.
You know, Adam, there is that. I get that. You know, I went to a show Saturday night and I haven't turned it in yet, but same thing, an old 80s Michigan hardcore band that came from the east side of the state and came over and played such an amazing show and were so good and so underrated. You know, nobody's ever heard of them. I hope people will read about it. You know, I hope people see that the show is in Grand Rapids and know that it's being want to read it. But there is something magical about punk news. And I know you guys, we've discussed a little bit about taking the comments away, but the one of the coolest thing about punk news, and all of us almost have written for different places, and you're sort of like throwing it into the void and you never know what happens. With punk news, you get almost instantaneous feedback. Unfortunately, sometimes it's like you're writing about a band that you really like and you want to help promote, and the first comment is, "These guys suck ass," or something, and that's always kind of a bummer, but I love the immediacy of it, you know. And I would hate to get rid of the comments personally, even though 50% of them are crap. 80% of them.
80% is a better number. I don't know. It's weird. There's no solution to this problem. I don't know how we're going to solve it. In any case,
we could go to the houses that people leave bad comments and smack them around a little.
Yeah, but at that point we're just
vigilantes. I'm pretty sure 90% of those commenters are in the Philadelphia area. We could just go over to John's and do it all in one weekend.
Well, no, hold on. I just said vigilantes, but that's not right. I guess we're just sort of criminals. Like, if we just go around and abuse people.
Yeah, we're not doing anybody any good. We're not making society better.
Yeah, that's probably not a great life choice. In any case, if you want to make a great life choice, podcast@punknews.org is how you email us. John, is there any mail that we should be aware of?
There is, and this is from Triac. Here's what Triac has to say. Punk news, I love the program, but you spend a lot of time talking bad about Rancid. I agree that their most recent albums haven't been that good, but have you checked out The Interrupters? They are basically Rancid with a female vocalist, and all their songs are co-written with Tim Armstrong, so you might like them even if you don't like Rancid. And that's from Triac.
I feel like I'm certainly aware of The Interrupters. I mean, they have a huge single right now. They're a band that I never went and sat down and gave a whole lot of thought to, and I don't know why. I mean, I should probably go revisit that record because it is huge, right? Like what, She's Kerosene, right? That is like, is that maybe just a Canada thing? I don't know, but it seems like a legitimate rock hit up here.
I mean, it's a great song for sure. I actually had somewhat of an epiphany about 6 months ago. About 6 months ago, I was up in Wilkes-Barre, PA, and I was at an excellent record store up there. I can't remember the name of it, but it's like only like one of the two or three ones in Wilkes-Barre. I think it's called like Round Sound or something like that. Really good record store. And I was there, and like there was this pretty good ska music on the store PA. I'm like, wow, that's really good. I'm like, is that The Interrupters? And then it played She's Kerosene. I'm like, wow, The Interrupters are like really, really good. So I bought the CD. And on my ride home, it wasn't as good as what it was in the store. So I realized the reason I thought, like, you know, when you're at the record store, like sometimes it just sounds better because you're in a great mood. You're going through records, you know. And so it's good. She's Kerosene is great. It's got a lot of great tracks. The thing that I can't shake with The Interrupters, and I'm going to be completely honest here, is it does sound like it's Rancid. And on the CD, because we got this email, I actually pulled out my CD. Do you guys know how many different forms of credits Tim Armstrong gets, like how many different types of credit he gets on this album? Go ahead and guess.
Like he's sweeping the floor.
Producer, co-writer,
right? And we'll count co-writing as one.
Drug dealer.
So counting co-writing is one. How many different credits do you think he has on the CD?
Did he drive him around? Was he chauffeur, producer?
Nine. There aren't nine things. What are they? there aren't nine things that you do on a record. What does he,
do? Well, he set up the microphones for the drums, Adam. He set up the microphones for the guitar amps.
Executive producer, guitar, songwriter, additional vocals, guest vocals, design layout, all songs written by Tim Timebaum, the Interrupters. Special thanks to Tim Timebaum. Management, Tim Timebaum. Claps, Tim Timebaum. It goes on and on and on. And I don't even
know. Are you sure that's only nine?
Well, I you want me to read them all? I mean, no. Oh, I suppose I get, yeah. So, I mean, the point being is it's clearly, and you want to be careful because there's the whole thing with Hole, you know, Courtney Love and Hole. It's like, well, actually, Kurt Cobain wrote the whole thing and Courtney Love didn't do anything. I don't think that's accurate at all, especially if you listen to early Cole recordings from before she knew Kurt. There's some pretty cool stuff. So you don't want to be the guy that says, oh, the girl didn't do anything. It was all the guy who did everything. That being said, I'm a little frustrated by this recording because she, Amy, the singer, who I think is an incredible singer, she adopts Tim's mannerisms both lyrically and like his flats. Like she's a great singer, but she sings with him and she even adopts his accent, what she didn't do on the first two records, which is kind of weird. And I'm like, well, why can't she just be her? Why is she being the female Tim, I guess?
And she's like shuffling around like a homeless person, jumping in trains?
No, but you know how like Tim, like he does that flat vocal intonation.
The punk Bob Dylan thing, yeah.
Right. And it's honestly, it's not a great record. It's a pretty good record. But I'm going to be completely honest. Like, it was really bugging me. And I thought, you know what, though? If she wasn't like really good looking, would it bother me as much? And the answer is, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, maybe I'm bothered that like, I'm not bothered that she's very good looking. I'm bothered that, like, why am I fixated on her? That's what I'm saying. Like, why is it sticking with me so much? Like, if it was just another guy, like, Time Again, there's that band Time Again that's basically just Rancid, but it's different dudes. Like, I don't give a shit about that band. You know what I mean?
So you're saying that if instead of the Interrupters, front woman being who she is, let's say that band was fronted by like a Trout, right? You're like
a fish.
Yeah. Like a fish, right? Like a trout.
An angry
right?
parrot.
Oh. And you're like, and you're like, this trout kind of sounds like Tim Armstrong. Are you cool with that?
I think all trout sort of sound like Tim Armstrong.
Like I said, like if it was Time Again sounding Rancid, I wouldn't give it a second thought. I'd be like, I don't care about this at all. So I'm saying like even me who, you know, I think I'm pretty fair across all genders when it comes to, you know, reviewing music and interviewing bands, but even someone like me, there's still something down in there. So I think a lot of people could look, I mean, honestly, like a lot of these social justice guys on the Punk News comments section, they say blah, blah, blah. On other comments, you can tell they're being blatantly sexist and they just won't cop to it. Like all the crap they give to Dog Party, which is so undeserved, you know, all the crap they give to all these other bands, you know, which is so undeserved. It's really sexist. And the point is, like, maybe we all sort of have issues that we haven't fully addressed, you know?
It's all these angry white men that are angry at us because all we cover is white men. But here's my thing with the Interrupters, right? So I've seen them, I think, about three times. They're a fun live band. They always do an Operation Ivy cover, and they're very rancidish. But they're just so derivative. There's just nothing special about them. There's nothing. They're just too derivative. That's it. That's all there's to it. I mean, they're fun. They're not bad. I mean, I'm not saying they're bad, but they're just. There's just nothing special.
I would agree with you, except for the new record has some songs that are fine, not special. But the new record does have like four songs that are like really good. Although they sound like Rancid, you know. But she's singing. But then maybe that's not a bad thing, because honestly, Rancid kind of sucks now, and she sounds awesome and she's a great singer. So maybe that is a good thing. I don't know.
Well, maybe they should call their band Girl Rancid then, so people would.
Well, I think that's the meaning. I've got a lot of things to work through here, Tom.
I'm gonna have some angry white men angry.
I'm just being honest, you know.
If there's one, my major beef with Rancid, and again, the person you wrote in is right.
Rancid,
like,
news.
We maybe complain about them a little bit too much, but it is complaining out of a lot of familiarity, I think, at this point. And it's different than the way that we'd say complain about fucking Weezer or something like that, right? Because Weezer, at least for me, they were a band that I grew up with as a kid and all that, but they were never a band that I felt. I didn't feel any kinship with them. Like I didn't care really what happened to Weezer. Like if Weezer if Weezer didn't come back with that green album in those after that like years of silence following Pinkerton, it would not have bothered me. And the fact that after that record, things went whatever which way they did, like they're dumb songs, and I have decided they're not a band I really care to listen to anymore. But none of that affects me.
You never connected with them at a deeper level.
Yeah, right. Rancid was a band.
Sounds pretentious, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, like
Rancid is to you what Danzig is to John and I.
It might be,
we hate,
right?
Because we love.
You know, Rancid was a band that I followed like intently, but not just that, but like the whole like extended Rancid universe via Hellcat, right? Like I was following everything Hellcat was putting out for a while. And really one of my greatest disappointment here isn't necessarily that like the quality of Rancid stuff necessarily petered out or anything like that. It's that Tim as the curator seemed to go away. Like during those golden Hellcat years before Rancid went and signed back to Sire and sort of just like let Hellcat as a project fall by the wayside. I was excited whenever there was a band that showed up on that label that I'd never heard before. And it was always, I knew it was going to be something that was, you know, probably related to the Rancid sound. And even though they weren't all going to be, you know, Hepcat or the Slackers or, you know, Leftover Crack or F minus or anything like that, you were still going to get stuff that was, you know, that was fun and in that vein. So like, you know, I wasn't never super into like the Agrolites or Westbound Train or any of those bands, but you know, I get it. Like the vibe was cool. It was, you know, it fit that. So when Tim stopped, I guess, actively finding and putting out stuff on that label, and I don't know how much he actually ever actually did that himself or whether it was just like the Epitaph staff doing it.
Actually, Adam, I've got a little bit of inside info. At least on the earlier years, he was very involved in all of that.
Yeah. Like I really dug that. I dug really like the whole extended, even off of Hellcat, like the whole extended musical community that he was exposing. So like, you know, I was listening to fucking like King Django play like weird klezmer music, but it was only because, you know, at some point Django had that Stubborn All-Stars band together that I'm sure had, you know, Tim or at least Vic Ruggiero or one of those guys guest on that record. And you could get that there was like a whole deeper, you know, interesting ska punk scene going on. And you know, I don't get that vibe from what he's doing with the Interrupters, but that might just be my own bias kind of creeping in. Like I wish he would do that kind of thing more. Like I want to hear more about like, you know, the Tim Armstrong shepherded next generation of bands. That would be cool.
Well, isn't that what the Interrupters are?
To me, like, but it's too on the nose though. Like it's not like, oh, Tim found this cool band out there doing their own thing and then help them get a record out and help them get exposure. Interrupters is like, Tim is fucking intimately involved in that band, perhaps to a fault. So, so, you know, I'd be totally cool with Tim finding these bands and bringing them in, but like maybe back off being the 9 credits on the record guy.
Man, fair enough. Well, you can always reach that podcast at punknews.org. I've got a lot of stuff to work through with the Interrupters myself. I would suggest that the commenters work through a lot of stuff they have to work through as well.
Everybody needs to get their shit together. That's what we're trying to say. All right, we're going to play a song? Who's going to play a song? I got a song.
Kick it, Adam.
Anyone? It's me? All right, so here's the one thing I've realized is that as I get older, I kind of want punk rock to sound more ridiculous and goofy and less like it's trying to be sincere to me. So I found a band that is horrendously goofy in the best way, and I'm so into this EP. So there's a band the band is from Hamilton, Ontario. They're called Good Grief. The lead singer to the band is a guy named Dan Ashworth. I'm pretty sure he is English and is, you know, is English with a heavy slurred, almost, you know, almost drunken accent, an incredibly heavy accent. And if it isn't real, and maybe it isn't because I've never, you know, verified this, the inflections that he's putting into this into this band totally work with what they're doing. So Good Grief plays this like super rollicking, like 77 style punk rock. And they do it just like fiercely and with abandon, but also with a complete lack of shame about how fucking ridiculous and goofy it is. And I enjoy that. This is not a band that is trying to, trying to sell me on them being, being the next Bruce Springsteen or anything like that. So the band, they put a four or five song EP out just a week ago on a little label called Trash Boy Records. The EP they put out is called Outside the Off License. The band is called Good Grief. And I'm going to play you the first song off the Good Grief record, which is called Good Grief, bracket, the song. And this is the band basically singing their own theme song, and it is totally bananas, and it's great. So here we go. This is Good Grief. Good Grief. You should go listen to them. They're on Bandcamp or wherever else you find your shit. Let's talk about some of the stories, some of the things that went on this week. John, we're gonna beat this dead horse one last time here.
Are you sure it's the last time?
We may prevent you. We may have an intervention and prevent you from talking about this again. But there's further news on the. On the sad decline of the Woodstock 50 festival. Do you want me to read this or you just want to tell a story?
I'll just tell the story real quick, Dan. So anyways, I won't go through the whole of the back history, but Woodstock has been having a lot of problems. They've got even more problems now. Let's see here. Okay, one of their producers. Watkins Glen International, the place where they were going to have the event and where they filed permits to have the event very late in the game in like March, which is crazy. Most places have their permits a year and a half, 2 years beforehand. Well, they denied Woodstock 50 happening there. After that happened, one of the producers, CID Entertainment, which provided camping, travel, package, and transportation, they pulled out as well. So even though Woodstock 50 still says they have investors, they no longer have a place to have their concert, and they claim they're looking for a new venue to have the concert, which at this point is just about 2 months away. Let's see, July, August. It's literally 2 months away right now. It's 2 months away. It's a major festival. Tickets aren't on sale. They don't have a venue. They don't have a permits for a venue, and they don't have several production companies. And they presumably they do have some sort of investors. Meanwhile, the guys that are throwing it, they're saying it's still happening. It's still happening. And one gets the impression that everyone is just kind of pandering to them, saying, "Yeah, yeah, it's still going to happen. You just got to believe." It's like in MASH when the guy's passing away, and he's like, "Hawkeye, I can't see. Am I at my house? Is my mom making apple pie?" And Hawkeye's like, "Yeah, yeah, your mom's making apple pie. I can smell it. It's delicious." And the guy's like, "I can smell it, Hawkeye. It's delicious." And then he passes away. One gets that this is that kind of a thing.
I love that analogy.
Oh, we should make this show way more about MASH.
I made the analogy last week, and I'll make the analogy again, John, that it's like the Black Knight from Monty Python and the Holy Grail, whose arms and legs are chopped off and blood is gushing everywhere, and Woodstock is still saying, "'Tis only a flesh wound. Everything's fine. Everything is fine." So I still won't be going.
I assume that there is there's the one individual that is the one really kind of like pushing to keep this going. What does this gentleman have to lose by, I don't know, I guess at the very least postponing this?
The respect of his great-grandchildren, Adam.
Well, Adam, one thing is there's only going to be one 50th anniversary if you wait a year for the 51st anniversary. Second, and I have nothing to back this up with, but in my mind, the reason he's so desperate needs this to happen is because he owes a bunch of like Ukrainian gangsters like a lot of money or something. So he really needs this to go through or else he's got problems.
No, John, it's because he met the love of his life at the original Woodstock, and he thinks if he throws Woodstock 50, she'll come back and he'll reunite with her.
Yeah, that's a good story, too.
We got to get going on these screenplays, John. We got a lot of good ideas, a lot of good
hypothetically, Adam, what he loses is the 50th anniversary cash in name.
But he's still they're still selling the merch, though, you know?
You can still buy the Stucky Dowell tube for $18.
Yes, exactly. And I will be soon.
The ongoing slow motion car crash of this makes the merch, in my mind, more interesting. Like, at one point does this stuff become collectible? Because it's like those shirts they print for the person that doesn't win the Super Bowl, but they have to have the shirts printed anyways. And then as soon as the other team wins, they just like pulp the shirts and or ship them off to be, you know, distributed in some country where, I don't know, people don't have shirts. You know what I'm talking about? How they do this?
Oh, South Dakota?
Yeah, South Dakota.
No, there's like children in Africa running around right now with Chicago Cubs 1984 World Series champs on them.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So.
And they did not even get to the World Series.
But those that
turnaround time on printing was much slower in the 80s.
That type of merchandise at some point becomes kitsch, and I imagine that like a lot of hipsters that would never be caught dead at Woodstock 50 would totally be down wandering around town with a Woodstock 50 that didn't actually happen shirt or tube.
I would prefer to wear it if it didn't happen.
Right. Like,
I mean, see, after the lineup. Yeah.
See, I think maybe that's the whole thing, is they're just trying to create some it's just a long con to create like a ironic hipster clothing line.
Maybe.
I think that's really the best that they could hope to get out of this. John, can we stop talking about Woodstock now?
Only if it stops being funny. If it's funny next week, I'm talking about it again.
All right, yeah. So we'll let it go.
I mean, it's just. I mean, how much more can it take, John? It's just got to be decapitated and just be done with.
I want to know, like, in the core of Woodstock, like, is the whole team like, "We're going to make this happen. We're going to make this happen," or as I've seen in my job, like the guy at the top has some delusion and everyone below him is just like, yeah, that's what we'll do. That's a good idea, you know.
Oh, can I comment on like the politics fest of the United States of America? Because that would be a pertinent analogy for me as the smug Canadian to bring up. So let's shit on Rancid now, because we were told not to do that. So there is a late summer headlining tour that Rancid has put together. It is going to feature Pennywise playing every show with them. And then most of the nights are going to have different openers, who, you know, include bands like Suicidal Tendencies, The English Beat, The Aquabats, Turnstile, Iron Reagan. Who else is on the list here? We get them all? Angel Dust.
And that's it, really.
And that's it. So anyways, it's kicking off on, what is it, September?
September.
Yeah. So September 14th in Philadelphia, going through
Pittsburgh, rather.
Oh, sure. Pittsburgh. Wow. Okay. I can't tell which month is which number, nor which words are which words. There, September 14th in Pittsburgh, Worcester, Massachusetts, Toronto, Detroit, Cleveland, Baltimore, then Philly, then Las Vegas, then Salt Lake City, ending up in Denver on the 28th of September. So you can find all those dates and exactly when they are and where they're playing over at Punk News right now. So I guess, first of all, John, you going to this sucker in Philly?
No, probably not, but if I have like nothing else to do and I don't have to spend money to get in, then I'll go. But I'm not trying to be a hater. I like Rancid, but like I said, I've got a weird chip on my shoulder about Rancid. I'm not exactly sure why, but at Punk Rock Bowling, even though Rancid is about 15 years younger than Flag and The Damned, they came off as much older at Punk Rock Bowling, and their songs seem much more nostalgic, whereas The Damned and Flag seemed immediate. And I wonder, is the party over? Like, are people going and to them it's like, oh, it's Rancid 1995 or Rancid 1998, and you get there and it's like old songs and it's old guys, and like we talked about the Ska Fest on the beach, where you go and it's a bunch of like 45-year-old dudes in sandals, and you go expecting to have the fun that you had when you were 18, but it's just old and depressing. I feel like Rancid might be hitting that point unless they do something interesting, which is a shame. I like Rancid, and honestly, they're doing a pretty good job of making interesting lineups. There's no bands here that are very surprising. Like, if you want a cool band to give you some cred, you have Iron Reagan on your bill, you know? If you want to satisfy the old heads, you have Suicidal Tendencies on your bill.
But you know, the thing is, this poster, I gotta say, I saw this and I'm like, wow, this is really amazing. So I looked at the Detroit show and only two of the bands were opening. I think it was English Beat and Angel Dust or something. Like, oh, you know what I mean? The poster's better than the lineups, because each bill, you know, each show only has a couple of them.
Well, I think it's cool the English is Beat. I mean, that's cool having got newer bands. They don't have any brand new bands, but newer bands and older bands.
No, I agree. I want all the bands to play every show.
I just get the impression that Rancid, the band, is kind of running out of gas, to tell you the truth. I could be wrong.
Now,
I think they're one of those bands, unfortunately, that people still like to go see live, but I don't think people really care about their new records, and their set list, when you see them live, reflects that, honestly. They play very heavily from the mid-90s, still.
I was looking at this, and I mean, I've been ambivalent to Pennywise my whole life, so I guess I got to work through that, but one of my favorite, like, young teenage, you know, high school memories was like loading up a bunch of friends in a shitty car and driving the 2 hours up the QEW to Toronto so that we could see, you know, Rancid or Bad Religion or AFI play at were these like, there's like waterfront venues. Toronto's waterfront has improved a lot since what it was, but back then it was basically just like a bunch of fucking, you know, rundown salt factories in the water. And among those, there would be a couple venues that were like big warehouse style venues. One of them may have been called The Warehouse, I'm not quite sure, where you would go see, you know, a band of, say, like Bad Religion or Rancid size in the late 90s, early 2000s play. And those were always like totally amazing shows to go to as a youth. So I wonder now, like, if I went to this Rancid show, and fuck, but you know what, I'll get down with Pennywise, whatever. Like, if I'm going to the show and I'm going you know, I'm going to embrace all of it. Am I going to have a super good time? That is my question. I want to see if that's going to happen. The caveat to that is that now that we're in legal drug world, can I go up there and have a super good time anyways? I don't know. It might just work. Maybe that's what you need. It's like
Adam is going to put his arm around a man on each side of him and scream and sing bro him. Bro at the top him. Of his
oh
lungs.
Man. Like, yeah. I like maybe, see it now. Maybe that's oh, it. Maybe, you know, it's true that, you know, that the Rancids and the Pennywises of the world are getting kind of like boring and flabby, but you counter that by the fact that you can just be high the whole time.
Are you saying the Rancid is the new Grateful Dead?
Maybe. I don't know. I need to find out. This is what I need to find out.
That's exactly what he's saying. Pennywise is the new Steely Dan.
And I don't mean to bash on Rancid. It just nothing seems exciting or clever or interesting here. To me, it all just seems, well, here's Rancid.
Well, their live show's still pretty good. I saw it last year and really enjoyed it. I haven't enjoyed every show. It can be a little bit hit and miss, but they can still put on a real good show.
It seemed a little sloppy to me, but more so it seemed old.
Yeah, it's sloppy. Oh, it's definitely sloppy.
It's like they're like, and this song goes back to 1995, where his flag just comes out, you know, it's not my imagination. You're like, wow, this speaks to me right now. You know, I don't know.
Well, you can't compare everybody to Flag, John, or you're always going to be disappointed.
But I'll damn well try, Tom. You should
compare them to the Interrupters. Then you'll think it's pretty decent.
But see, I think I might rather see the Interrupters. I really want to see the Interrupters at this point.
Have you never seen them live?
No, I have not.
Okay, because I saw – yeah, I've seen – they're like I said, they're fun. They're not exceptional, but they're fun. Mm-hmm. It's the woman, the attractive woman singer, and then three brothers who all look exactly the same.
She has a name, Tom. It's Amy Interrupter.
Amy and the okay, Amy, yes, Amy Interrupter. Look at this beautiful baby girl. We should call her Amy Interrupter.
For some reason, all I pictured was Tom pulling out like a little book and a pencil and putting his glasses at the end of his nose. And in the book, he scribbles
writing Amy Interrupter.
Interrupter, underlines it, closes the book, puts it back in his pocket. Like that's where you keep all your phone numbers and notes and things. Because you're old.
I have a sign on my wall that says, try not to be a sexist prick, and I point at it when I find myself being a sexist prick.
All right, let's talk about HR.
Speaking of sexist pricks,
I didn't want to seg in like that because that wasn't necessarily a very kind seg. So, John, we were talking about like, is Rancid too old to be awesome anymore? But HR is really old. And so,
but he's not even really that old. He's only like 55. Wow. You know what I mean?
He looks like his own grandfather.
I imagine that HR is far more,
I bet she's older than that, John.
Far more weathered by his experiences than his biological age may give on. So anyways, HR Bad Brains, he's releasing a solo album soon. It's going to be called Give Thanks. It's coming out on October 18th via Hardline Entertainment. And that is all we know. John, what's your read on the HR story these days?
HR had some health issues, a little while ago.
Is the headache thing taken care of?
You know, I don't know. And they haven't like issued a statement on it. So I'm assuming it is, you know?
Yeah. Cause he had like debilitating, like make you want to kill yourself kind of headaches.
Right, right, right. I've seen HR solo live about four times, and it's, as I said before, I don't get the impression that he's well mentally. Like, he just gets up
John, there. He is 1 year younger than my mother. He is 63 years old.
He just gets up there and he kind of like just stares at the audience, and he doesn't move. He stands perfectly still, and when he sings, you can barely hear him, you know? And I get the idea that with older artists, if they perform, then you should at least give them respect. You shouldn't say, oh, he's the greatest thing I ever saw. But you say, wow, HR, you've done a lot for punk rock. You've done a lot for me. I'm so happy to see you. This is cool. This is neat, you know. But his latest solo albums, he's put out a couple over the past 5 years. Like, he's barely there. It's like it's clearly just that musicians is doing some stuff, and he was there for an hour just doing vocals over the top, and that's that. Like, it's so insignificant. Who is this doing any bona fide? I mean, if he really wants to release this, I guess good on him. But short of that, like, what is this doing for anyone? You know, I could be wrong. He might come out with the reggae album of 2019. But I don't see that happening just because on his last few albums, he barely sings. He just kind of like talks and goes like, la, and that's all he does. That's it, you know.
I know that on this tour, he's going on tour right now, and his backing band is a band of guys that were from Detroit originally called Downtown Brown. And they are definitely a full rock band, even though they do have some reggae stylings and some other things. So I'd be a little bit curious to see him live and what he's doing with that band behind him. But I don't know.
I'm seeing him next month with that band. We'll see. You know.
Yeah, we'll see. I have very low expectations for this. So if it's even halfway decent, I'll be pleasantly surprised.
Like, let's say the band rocks the hell out. He's probably just going to stand there that one, like, kind of stare at the audience.
And he doesn't do Bad Brain songs solo, does he? I mean, I should say he does
I and I Survive, and he does Leaving Babylon.
But he doesn't do any of the hardcore songs.
No. Or at least that's times that I've seen him.
If he came to, like, locally, I would go see him, but he's not coming any closer than 3 hours, and I just that's too far to drive for a train wreck.
That's a good sticker to put on, I guess, not the album, but maybe on the poster. Too far to drive for a train wreck, says Tom Trauma.
Yeah, exactly.
Have we exhausted this half of the show? Do we have anything else we want to talk about before we play another song?
No. Let's talk about this last story, because we've been totally negative Nancy's for the whole episode. Let's be positive.
I haven't. I've been good. I'm not sure about that.
I don't know what the story is, but
I have it in front of me. Where'd it go? This is why I'm wavering. Oh shit, here it is. Okay, yeah, we're gonna be negative about, well, we can't be negative about this. I could be negative about this.
No, I'm gonna be positive about this.
All right, so the Misfits have announced another show. It's in Oakland, California. They're playing with our buddies Rancid and The Damned and Harley Flanagan's Cro-Mags, which I think is the one that you call, like, Cro-Mags hyphen J or Cro-Mags hyphen B.
That's the John Joseph version.
Adam, are you being funny or not?
I know that there is a non-obvious denotation to Cro-Mags. You can't just say Harley Flanagan's Cro-Mags. It's actually
the,
like,
no, this is the Cro-Mags.
It's like, it's
Harley,
it's,
Flanagan's Cro-Mags are the Cro-Mags now.
Well, it's like, but I got it. So the Harley Cro-Mags, the dash between Cro and Mags is an M dash, but the other one, it's an N dash, which is like 3 pixels longer. But is a different grammatical meaning to that particular punctuation, and that's how you know which is which, N dash versus M dash.
I don't know about that.
Yeah,
I do like how Adam seems to be specifically encouraging trademark confusion, which was the crux of that entire lawsuit.
Their lawsuit did not solve trademark confusion.
When does Harley get the name then, John? You're saying Harley doesn't have the name yet.
No, not till, I think it's mid-July or mid-August.
That is confusing. That's confusing.
But yeah, John Joseph's version is going to be Cro-Mags JM for John and Mackie. Or Joseph and Mackie. I don't know, something like that. Cro-Mags JM. It's just as catchy, Adam.
Stupid name.
It really is. I'd rather be Cro-Mags 77 or Cro-Mags AD.
That's not that bad, Cro-Mags AD. They used to be called Cro-Mags Jam, which I thought was a really good name, you know, but
Cro-Mags. Really? I think that sounds too much like, when I see Jam, when I hear Jam, I mean, it makes me run the other direction. Oh my gosh, Jam. Like Dave Matthews connotation or something. I don't know.
Or no, like, jamming for this. Like, yeah. Oh, I'm allergic to pectin. No jam, please.
I only like jelly.
All right, so John, so okay, regardless of which of the 300 different Cro-Mags is playing this show, there's an unsaid sub part of this story, which is that there's been a lot of talk going around over the fact that the Misfits reunion is not just some open-ended reunion that will never stop. This is not the Pixies reunion. This is a reunion that has been contractually limited to a certain number of shows, of which that number is about to exhaust. I guess, so is that true? Is that smart? Are you down with that?
Well, so most people have seen that there's some kind of settlement agreement going around that, I honestly should spend it. Some website got what they presume is the settlement agreement, although it's not signed. So if it's not signed, it's not a settlement agreement, although there might be a signed copy somewhere. I was very surprised that they presumably filed that with the settlement of the case, because the whole reason you don't file settlement agreements and make them public is so to avoid stuff like this. Who knows? You know, now there's one way to solve that question, and that's to go pull the documents ourselves. I meant to, I just haven't gotten around to it. Anyway, there's some sort of settlement agreement floating that says the Misfits have to play 6 to 10 shows, or maybe it's 10 shows. They can do more if they want to, but they only have to do 10 in order to settle the lawsuit. This show at Oracle Arena is show number 10. And I got to say, and Danzig, being classic Danzig, he says there's probably not going to be a lot more Misfit shows because I want to make another fantastic movie, and I want to finally put out Danzig.
Yeah, we could probably. Oh, I can't believe we're not talking about that.
We'll talk about the answer.
The reviews are in, John. The reviews are in for Danzig's first movie.
And Danzig says, I want to do Danzig does Elvis, so there's probably not going to be a lot of more Misfits things. And to Danzig's credit, throughout his career, he has maintained, I don't want to live in the past. And really, if you look at his career, he never really has, although at certain points, he's done limited special things on the past and then gotten back to the contemporary, which I think is the exact way to do it. And that's exactly what he's done here.
Those Misfits shows, by allowing their to be scarcity, it keeps the value high, you know.
With the Misfits show is, and that's exactly what he did with Samhain, what he did with Danzig and Doyle, is they said, okay, here's the reunion. It's limited. We're not going to live in the past forever. We're just going to reflect for a little while, and then we're going to go on with the future. And I got the criticism of many reunions, the Pixies being the classic example. Everyone got all excited that the Pixies were together, and then the Pixies, with each year, they became less and less interesting until just here comes the Pixies again. I think Danzig is doing this the exact right way. 10 reunion shows. If you want to see us, everyone's got a pretty good opportunity to come see us. You know, like you might have to travel 4 or 5 hours, but if you really want to see the Misfits, you can. They do 10 shows. Each of the shows was very good or excellent, depending on who you ask. And then after that, it's done. And so they don't taint their legacy. They only reinforce their legacy about how awesome they are. And they don't overstay their welcome by making it commonplace, and then it's over. And I think that's the way to do it. I think the Misfits really kind of did the ideal reunion for a first wave punk band that has a massive popularity, if you will, at least for the kind of band the Misfits are. Fugazi would be a different animal, but I think this is the way to do it. And I think Operation Ivy, maybe I wouldn't want to see an Operation Ivy reunion, but were Operation Ivy to reunite, I think this would be the exact way to do it.
It doesn't.
Very few bands have reached the rarefied air of the Misfits, though. Short of a Dead Kennedys with Jell-O reunion or a Black Flag with Rollins reunion, I don't think any other band could create the kind of buzz the Misfits reunion has. They're just so, they just were so influential.
I would argue that,
you
like,
know, Operation Ivy's not playing hockey rinks to get back together. I mean, they could play a couple of big shows, but
do you think that the amount to which the Misfits has become has been, like, over the years, like, have merchandised and, you know, basically had their cool evaporated by a lot of crass consumerism, did that somehow pave the way for them to be able to have these shows with multi-hundred dollar tickets for them without us caring too much? Because we just said, John, you just said out of your mouth that this is the way for one of these kind of bands to do a reunion. But we're not commenting on the fact that it's, like, horrendously expensive, and that, you know, a lot of people that would want to see this and might be super fans couldn't possibly afford it, right? Like, that didn't factor in. And I feel that, of course, if it was Operation Ivy or Fugazi or one of those bands that got back together and played shows of these kinds, you know, tickets that were that expensive from those bands, everyone would be up in arms about the politics of it. But the Misfits, it's just like they've been merched to death at this point. So I feel that, you know, for the prestige of the band aside, the fact that there was such like an obvious money angle to this, that's fine, whatever. It's better than what
They've been merged to death, Adam, but they've also, part of the reason is because of that merch, they've never left the public consciousness. So a third generation punk who maybe got into it through Blink-182 or some god-awful later era punk band is still going to be familiar with the Misfits, but maybe not Fugazi or Operation Ivy, because the Misfits have been omnipresent for their whole time in punkdom. So maybe that, crass commercialism is... I don't think you can argue. I think their crash commercialism is definitely part of the reason why they're still the status they are today. Maybe Jerry only is smarter than Danzig.
I wonder why are they so. It's cool that the lineup has Dan and Cro-Mags. I like it. Honestly, it doesn't have to be Dan and Cro-Mags. It could be some more popular modern band that people love. I think it's cool that it is Dan and Cro-Mags, and that could. I mean, Dan catches a lot of flack, but he does a lot of cool stuff too. I wonder
why all the lineups. Every reunion show has had a cool lineup. True. Usually, a good mix of punk and metal.
Why are they so weird about Doyle though? Like. Thomas, in the Secret Misfits group, if you ask, is Doyle playing, you get booted from the group. Like, why are they so weird about it?
Really?
Yeah, we're not booted.
That Misfits group is so psychotic, John. I mean, I think we only stay around to watch the train wreck that it's becoming. It's funny because Doyle's never announced as being part of the thing, and he always ends up there at the last minute. I would be a little cheated, feel a little cheated if Doyle wasn't involved at this point.
Yes and no. I mean, but Doyle comes across as very combative in interviews, and I think he truly doesn't give a shit. You know what I mean? Like if you ever seen an interview.
Well, I assume the money's good for him.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and also he's made a point that like the Misfits, like even to his brother's detriment, he said the Misfits is Glenn Danzig, and I understand that, and I'm just here to be a part of it and contribute.
Well, he obviously did that tour, and I saw him two or three times on this tour when he did the Misfits set with Danzig's band.
Yeah.
And so he sort of had to side with Glenn over his brother at that point, right?
Oh, no, he already had. He was actually talking trash to his brother before that.
I don't know. I could have gone to Chicago to see the show. I know you went and saw it in Jersey, John. I could have gone to Chicago and see the show, and I just decided not to. I can't go see the Misfits. A band that's been part of my life for forever and that I love. I just can't stand to go see him play at a hockey rink. The thought of it just doesn't work for me. So I stayed home and did, I don't know what, watched Little House on the Prairie reruns with my wife or something.
So anyways, this is the theme song to Little dinner. House. Do you want to play a song, Tom?
Yeah, sure. I want to play a song from a band from Kansas City, a trio that I like a lot called Hip Shot Killer. I reviewed their album earlier this year, and I was preparing for the show, as I always do, I found a WAV file for a song from them, from the new record. So, this is Places We Want to Be, and it's from their new album called All This Time Is Ours. Hip Shot Killer from Kansas City. Check it out.
Hot.
All right, we're back. There's a bunch more media stories and various things that we might want to talk about. John's a lot of these are right up your alley. So what do you want to talk about?
Let's see what's most important here. Let's do radio. I don't even really care about Radiohead, but this is probably the most interesting story. So some guy got a hold of Radiohead's mini discs. I think he hacked into their computers, and then he demanded $150,000, or else he said he would release the material on the mini discs. So Radiohead had the last laugh. They said, "Screw you, we're not paying any ransom." And they just released about 18 hours of stuff from OK Computer, basically demos and alternate cuts. And you can buy them on Bandcamp for £18, which is about $30 USA. We're in the age of digital terrorists stealing stuff, and Radiohead doesn't negotiate with terrorists. They put it on up. And
so it wasn't even a new record?
No.
It was like a new unreleased record. Oh, boy.
I don't know.
$150 grand for a bunch of outtakes? Yikes.
I don't know either. I don't know what this hacker's plan was. It's like, oh no, you released our stuff.
This guy's a master criminal, huh?
Yeah. So, I mean, it all could have been some kind of a scam, maybe. Like, maybe it's a big prank. I don't think it is, though. But
like a publicity stunt.
Yeah. But
God knows Radiohead could use something to make them appealing. But yeah.
I'm more curious about
lots of people like.
Like, how did this guy, like, we just kind of take it verbatim that it says, like, the hacker hacked into Radiohead's files. Like, well, where were Radiohead's files that they were hacked? Like, Radiohead
in the cloud, Adam. Like, up in the clouds.
Like, what does that mean exactly? Like, does Radiohead have, like, a vault full of servers and someone, like, dropped in on a wire from in the ceiling? what the fuck does that mean? Radiohead
are very peculiar. I believe they buried it all in a time capsule and buried it in their backyard. And this guy actually went in there with a shovel.
Are you saying your BS detector is going off?
Well, my BS detector is just going off with regards to like hacked their files. What that means? Because the boring answer to that is, and maybe the answer that doesn't sound too. Too glorious for someone that is considered such a respectable artiste as Tom York there is that, you know, oh, he clicked the phishing scam, right? He got the email that was like, "Hi, Tom, this is your bank. Please put your password in so that we can tell you an important message." And he went, "Oh, okay." And he put in his password like an idiot. And then someone had his password and I don't know. Read his email because he used the same password for anything. Like most of the times when someone is hacked, it's not because their data security was breached in an interesting way. It's usually because they accidentally gave up their easily, you know, their overused password because they were a dummy. And this story doesn't really get into like who was the dummy. That's what I want to know. I don't really care about Radiohead. I just want to. I want to know that they're human. That they bleed. That if you prick Radiohead, they bleed. And if you send enough dumb phishing emails to Radiohead, they accidentally click one because they want that Nigerian prince's money. That's what I want to know.
Or their password is 1234.
Oh yeah, like,
1234 Radiohead.
Yeah. Like I want to know the stupid part of it. I'd love it for them to come out and say, "Hi, yes, you know, everyone loves us, and we're the greatest band ever. However, we are stupid, and our password was this."
I'm the opposite. I want them to like have a bunch of DAT tapes from the studio, and he just like goes to the grocery store and leaves like his car window rolled down.
Well, that's good too.
It's like, that's Time York, and he steals all these like tapes from his Subaru.
I want the opposite. See, I want the hacker to be like a team of like 11 super criminals that like sneak into Radiohead's like complex. They go through the motion detectors and stuff and get it out. And they're like, "We did it."
Mission Impossible. Or, yeah.
We got the secrets. We got the mini disc. And the Tom York is like, "I don't care." You know?
What's our next mission? Are we going to blow up the moon or hack Radiohead?
No one tries to blow up the moon anymore. That's really the problem that I think we're trying to illustrate in this podcast.
We literally screw with our ocean currents.
So, John, speaking of blowing up the moon, you want to talk about Tau Cross here?
Yeah, sure. Tau Cross, there's not a whole lot to mention here. Tau Cross is, of course, fronted by Stig Miller of Amoebix, John Misery of Misery, Andy Lefton of War Plague, Michael Langevin of the band Voivod, and I think there's one other guy in the band. They've got their third album coming out. The third album is called Messengers of Deception. I put Messengers of Deceptio, which is not quite the same. And it's out August 9 via Relapse. The first record was very good, not excellent. Second record, a lot of people were kind of disappointed. The third one may be a ripper because it's the first one where they all recorded in the same studio at the same time. I've got high hopes for it. I love Amoebix. I like Tau Cross. And the whole album basically deals with a lot of Gnosticism and mind control and all that kind of stuff. So it should be an interesting record, and I hope it does well for the band. I think they haven't been quite getting the reception they were hoping for. I think this will be the maker or breaker.
I'm not sure who the audience is for this band anymore, but I did not hear the first album, but I heard the second one. I liked it quite a bit. It's definitely kind of weird. Got kind of a gothy Sisters of Mercy heavy metal kind of sound to it.
Yeah,
I think they're cool though.
Yeah, I got nothing particular to say. This is a cool song. It's fun. I'm down. That's all. That's all we're talking about, John.
Adam.
One last one here. Are you gonna talk about the garden? We're all gonna go. We're gonna go have a smoke.
I'll just talk about this briefly. I mean, if anybody wants to hear about it. The Garden, they put out a new music video. The Garden, to me, is still one of the most interesting bands in punk rock. The two twin brothers, and they make either hyper minimalist wire style punk, or they do like this weird synth punk, or they do what this is this kind of thing, what's in the middle. It actually kind of reminds me a lot of New Order. They've got a new video called Thy Mission, and it's got guest vocals from a guy called Mac DeMarco. Adam and Tom, do you know who Mac DeMarco is?
The white rapper, isn't he?
No, I don't think he's a rapper. No, he's not a rapper.
Will he? Then no.
He is a person that I have now taken pride in the fact that I don't know who he is. I understand that he is some sort of indie rock singer-songwritery kind of person, but he is, at least as I understand it, someone that everyone knows who he is, and it's obvious who he is, but I don't know who he is, and I now wear that as a badge of pride.
So Mac DeMarco is extremely quote cool right now, and he's gigantic. His videos get like 17 million views. That's no joke. You know what I mean? That's a lot.
Canadian, Adam.
But if you listen to his music, it's like easy. It's like 70s easy listening. It's like Cat Stevens meets like Steely Dan. It's like this is what the kids are into. I was very surprised by that. That being said, I wonder if it's somewhat frustrating for the Garden because they were kind of around before he was, and he kind of linked up with them and then became a lot more popular than they are. And I think that's because, and this just goes to show, the Garden is an extremely clever, weird band, and the most clever, weird, interesting stuff isn't usually what becomes the most popular. Perfect example, Operation Ivy, you know, not huge, you know, or even better example, Classics of Love. Not huge, and they really should have been. The Garden, I love The Garden. I like this video. I hope they keep doing their thing. I hope they don't get discouraged. They've been around for about 8 or 9 years now, and you know that's kind of the tipping point on whether or not you're going to do it for real, you know. They're not huge. They were on a quick rise for a while. They're not really on a quick rise right now, so we'll see. They've been putting out a lot of singles not associated with an album. So I hope they stick out there and keep doing it, and I'll definitely be following along.
I didn't mind this song, John. I'm okay. I'm okay with the whole Garden thing. I know it's one of those bands that like the universe seems to shit on you for, but every once in a while,
they're an interesting band.
Well, not only that, but the myopic sort of like punk news commenter universe will treat this as a band that like you have somehow, you know, cocked up out of thin air, and you are the only one that talks about them. But then I will go see like big festival lineups or whatever, and the Garden is fairly highly placed on it. And I'm like, all right, you know, if this was just some band that John made up, then or it was just some dumb local band that John decided that he was going to champion incessantly, they clearly would not have the level of attention that they have right now. Not that attention equals quality, but come on, you didn't. The Garden exists outside of John Gentile, and I accept that.
Thank you. And that is one. And we bitch about the comments a lot. And we shouldn't focus on the comments. This is one of the things that really frustrates me at Punk News with the comments. Like, we'll post about Amo and the Sniffers. We'll post about Surfboard. We'll post about the Garden. And they'll be like, "What is this bullshit?" You know, I hate this. It's like if you're actually involved in the punk scene, like you actually go to actual punk shows, if you know what's quote hip, even if what hip is matters or doesn't matter, like if you know what is on the forefront of the punk rock discussion with people that are immediately involved in the punk rock scene right now, it is Amo and the Sniffers, it is Surfboard, it is the Garden on the West Coast. And so when these comments, they're like, "John, this is bullshit. You know, John, get out of here." It's like, you're the one that's out of touch and old, not me. You know, I'm the one that knows what's happening, not you.
John, just tell us what the Bouncing Souls are doing. We don't care about your bullshit.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, it's cool that you like the Bouncing Souls, but don't chastise me for being more aware of what's happening at the ground level of punk rock than you are and the press release from Private Press or Wiretap. Like, yeah, you got the press release, but I've been to the show and I know what's kicking. I know what's driving the conversation right now at the ground level, you know. And I'm not the be all and end all, and there's people that know more than me by a lot. But I mean, don't chastise me for talking about Amo and the Sniffers, one of the most interesting modern punk bands, when you don't even know what they are or what they're about, dude.
Yeah. So okay, I wasn't trying to tee you up to yell at the world there, but I guess that's what you did. That's fine, John. Do you want to play a song for all the people who just yelled at?
Yeah. And here's a band that is on the ground level that you guys don't know about, and you're pricks, not you and Adam, but the commenters that I don't like. This is a guy called Andy Human of the Reptoids, and Adam, like, this is right up your alley. This is Spitz meets Devo meets first wave punk rock. This is Andy Human of the Reptoids. They just put out a new record. I missed them in Philadelphia. I'm so sad I couldn't make it out. But they've got two albums out and a bunch of singles. They're cool. Andy Human and the Reptoids coming at you.
That's a show. Podcast at punknews.org is how you would send us an email if you were so inclined to do that. Sean, anything else to say to the people?
I'm no longer reviews editor, so don't give me crap if you don't like the reviews or say we're out of touch. even though you're the one that's out of touch, not me. And don't come crying to me, Mr. Record Label Owner, that puts out boring records and demanding attention when you get more attention than anybody. And I know who you are. The music you put out is garbage. But don't come crying to me, because I'm not in charge anymore. But dump-a-dump-dump.